I mean, I think that the discovery of the Nag Hammadi texts, I believe Upper Egypt in the, mid 20th century, could be seen as some kind of divine grace, higher dimensional gift or offering or intervention for humanity to discover some of the mystic roots of Christianity or rectify some of the mistakes of current orthodoxical Christian view. Meaning it's a sort of important event for the world to be reconnected with Gnostic vision and text, the Gnostic text being the gateway to the Gnostic vision or theology, worldview, metaphysics, and practices of the other Christianity, right? The shunned esoteric Gnostic Christianity. That's an important discovery for that affects metaphysical balances of the world, actually, in terms of leading a certain group of seekers, Christian people generally, mystics, yogi-minded or free-thinking Christians and scholars, opening a gateway that had been shut for 2,000 years. And affecting the metaphysical balances of positive, negative, or light, light, not light, or degree of light in collective consciousness of the collective consciousness of humanity. So it is a, it's, it can be seen as an important event, similar to, the incarnation of Yeshua or Gautama or great world teachers. Something, there is a importance to it beyond just the help that it gives those who study the texts. There is a metaphysical power, I think, associated with that rediscovery. Yeah. There is a very important principle that's associated with the intense struggle between leaders of different religions or those who have power and authority that represent different spiritual views associated with different sects, 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 meaning religious subgroups. The idea, and you can see that in some of the literature, even Fritz Springmeier maybe talks about it, that to control the peoples, you of course have to control their mind. And to control their mind, essentially, you need to, they need to have something to believe in. And some kind of religious or metaphysical, some kind of higher absolute power has to be established in the mind to truly control societies and civilization. It's some notion of God or savior or absolute power. Just having state power is and force is not considered enough by those on the negative path. To effectively control populations long term. And so the struggles in the first 3 centuries or so, or really, ongoing since the time of Yeshua, the struggles for supremacy of dominant religion in the region, in the regions, in the urban areas, particularly, the multiple groups with multiple religions or sects or religious type views, struggling or having conflict, even if the Gnostics were retiring, they simply, like Valentinus, almost becoming Bishop of Rome, this long-term struggle for supremacy of spiritual view, of religious perspective, or whose God shall be our God, whose God shall the people will the people follow, and those who would be king or those who would be rulers for generations or centuries have the view that our God must be the only God for the people to be under our control. There cannot be competing gods. And so this is why in terms of religious wars through the centuries, lots of temple statuary have their heads lopped off or their eyes gouged out. That's what vandals or really religiously minded henchmen or henchmen violent enforcers of despotic regimes did to statuary, meaning statues, in religious locations, temples and burial grounds and all sorts of places, whatever, throughout the centuries. Take their heads off or take out their eyes, you know, the stone, so as to show the do our dominance over that god, because we can rule when everyone follows our god, or when everyone follows this god, then those who are in control of that state religion will keep their power. So that's a big deal of control of the masses' religiosity. Yes, it's been going on for a long time. I mean, Akhenaten went against the priests of Re, I guess, so the story goes, or my little understanding of it. And before that time, they had gone against other pagan tribal deities and worship of that area of Egypt. So each group, each subgroup that seeks governmental legislature, it's not legislature, but some kind of political power or rulership, very importantly, must cut the ties between the people and the previous gods or the gods of opposing power centers. Well, the people who were, you see, who wants to be first, right? There were leaders of the early Christian church, I'm sure, who simply wanted to stay in the desert or in the caves and perfect themselves or develop spiritually with the small community. And then there were those teachers that may have ties to those same hermetic, reclusive anchorite communities, meaning guys and gals who've gone off to the caves in the desert to develop themselves. There would have been people like Valentinus who had ties to them, or maybe Marcion, I don't know, who also were trying to spread the faith in the urban centers. And their desire to spread the faith may not have been the same as tyrants or rulers in that same location that wanted to use that religion or philosophy to consolidate power. Then you could have had some people like Valentinus who did become Bishop of Rome or did ascend into positions of power, and then, had to felt they needed to wipe out all the other competing religions. So you have a spectrum, but you have a spectrum of religiosity or practice or perspective in the members of each of the groups. You have the the anchorite. Anchorite is like a hermit or recluse, living alone or in small communities. You have those in the towns and the villages and the cities who are simply believers, some of them superstitious and some of them very spiritually developed intellectually or in terms of gnosis. And then you have members of those communities who were politically minded. And then you have political leadership that simply wanted to co-opt that philosophy. And you even had sincere members of those communities in the urban centers who did ascend to political power. And like in India, Ashoka, King Ashoka, who proclaimed Buddhism. I don't know if he killed other philosophies or religions, but I think he was considered a virtuous Buddhist king and very much helped the religion, but was associated with peace. But I don't know, you know, the nitty-gritty of Ashoka's reign and history. So I'm just saying, you've got all sorts of different perspectives within any one of the religions or sects. But it's just an interesting point, I think, personally, that to control a population, you ultimately have to control their religious impulses. Either to de-religious, you know, de-spiritualize or bring them into a universal atheism or materialism like we have today, or co-opt their beliefs and pin them to the state, like this is the Holy Roman Empire, not just the Roman Empire, but the Roman Empire that pushes this religion. Or some application of pure teachings in positions of power that are not destructive to other traditions. So, but yeah, there's been a lot of struggle. Well, I feel the same way. I have absolutely no hope. Or not hope, but I have absolutely no belief that it'll happen in third density. Right. I think it'll only be when we're out of this dimension and back in a higher dimensional group. I mean, I don't have much hope for 3D Renaissance, 3D mass awakening. I don't think so. I think that the system is so corrupt. Or this, so the negativity is so interlaced, or really intergrown into the structures of human civilization today, all countries, all areas, all levels. Certain destructive, unhelpful ways, let's say, are so interwoven. To all structures of civilization globally, that it just has to die before anything new comes. And unfortunately, that probably would mean ELE, extinction level events, and things like that. It may, none of that may happen. The clock may run out first. Yeah. I mean, I think there are a few end game. Final act, concluding configurations that may occur before before dimensional shift. One is the clock runs out on a maintenance of the status quo, and when the clock runs out, or dimensional shift occurs, meaning this condition now where negativity is strengthening and positivity is strengthening. And there's great conflict, inner, outer, in societies, between groups, within individuals, while some are getting clearer and others are becoming more stuck, confused, and others are moving strong on negativity. And it ends just like this. Another, of course, is ELE, extinction level event, which is, you know, World War III, bio plague, genocide, you know, whatever, grid down, Nibiru, and that's second option. The other one is some kind of full victory of New World Order, global central one world government that would come after some ELE or be associated with some kind of be how the chips are rearranged after they've fallen. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the best we can hope for is a draw, frankly. I mean, it's also then the other option is a mass awakening, renaissance of human civilization, and the dawning new age of love and light in 3D. I don't think that's going to happen because I just think there are too many people, there are too many forces against it. But I think personally, the best we can hope for is a draw, or the clock runs out. And there is a card in the Steve Jackson Illuminati cards called Tape Runs Out. And it seems to show the Earth splitting apart or something, like Tesla beam. But this idea of the tape running out before the game is over, I think is very, very likely. Right, there are a lot of strange things happening these days. I just, to the extent that it's the result of HARP or various human electromagnetic technologies, opening portals to the lower astral, or doing some kind of invocation of negative entities from time space, or Orion playing around. I just wonder, how far does the Logos let this go? I mean, I know that the Logos will let the kids kill themselves in the playroom, but they won't let the house get burned down. I know that, but how much destruction in the playroom will be allowed, or how much bully activity will be allowed as it affects the home, not simply the room of the 3D? There's the room, the playroom of the 3D space-time realm. And then there's the home of the octave, or third density overall, with multiple inhabitants. In the many mansions, or many mansions, many rooms. Yeah, I don't really subscribe to that view to watch. So first of all, we've got the mythology, and then we've got to consider how it might accord with other known metaphysical systems like the raw material, and then we have to determine what truth might be. The truth of metaphysical reality. So, in that system, with the idea that some lesser deity created planets that are out of harmony or something, I don't think that's the case. Although, what? Maybe planetoids can be made by Orion, but. In my sense, my understanding is every solar system was created by a logos. The planets of every solar system were made by a logoic being akin to what we would call eighth density, a sub-logos. The harmony or not harmony of the planet is, to me, it seems a little bit like a human projection. To consider that some planets are harmonious and some are not, I think, is a human projection. However, there is a metaphysics raw set of 60-30-10, that 3D planets in this galaxy, 60% have a positive only harvest, 30% mixed, 10% negative only. The mixed harvesting 3D planets, 30%, the negatively oriented harvesting only 3D planets, 10%, that 40% could be called disharmonious, but is the disharmony a result of its creator's deficiency, or the state of consciousness of the beings in third density who, according to free will, their free will, have chosen service to self or a lack of positive polarization? To me, any such disharmony of the planet is not an intrinsic quality of the logos that created it, nor the planet as a being, but simply the deficiencies of love in the consciousness of the collective population in third density on that planet. Well, the question is, what level of beingness makes a planet for inhabitation? Now, I can imagine that Orion could fashion a planet, and I would call that a planetoid or an artificial body. It's certainly feasible that Orion created planetoid like that could be hosting any beings that Orion group transferred there. It's possible that fifth density negative entities do create planetoids also. So we have 4D negative, 5D negative beings, I guess, potentially able to create planetoids, and thus potentially being able to transfer some souls under their control to such planetoids. But I think in the main, seven-dimensional planets with seven energy bodies would only be created, be able to be created, or could only be created by a logos, sub-logos, solar being. That's my sense. I think that some of the modern interpreters of the Gnostics are a little bit heavy on a little bit weigh a little heavily on the powers of negativity that they ascribe, or the ascription or authorship of negativity of what of our life here on Earth. To negative authorship, meaning they're in some ways, I think, falling into the disinformation deception that Orion or negative entities would like us to believe, which is that their power is greater than it really is. Now, I can certainly imagine fourth and fifth density negative entities again can create planetoids and staff them or populate them somewhat, but those wouldn't be seven dimensional. They would be, like 3D artifacts, which don't have seven-dimensional energy fields, at least as far as I understand. So, to say that, psychopathic parents may have psychopathic children, sure, that's a human observation of human families, but we're talking about seven-dimensional creation, if we're talking about planets that could support soul evolution for multiple dimensional groups. And I don't think that Orion has that capacity because they're not even so fully in sixth density. They're only of fourth and fifth density. So I don't think they're going to be able to create seven-dimensional energy fields or planets with seven-dimensional fields. And I think that negativity surely wants people to think its power is supreme, sovereign, inviolable, undefeatable, invincible, but that's not the case. So, well, you see, that's another question. Is Earth not in harmony? Well, we have a difference between Earth as a planetary being, as a portion of the Logos, which is the cosmology of Ra and most systems that would say that the creator of light created all planets and solar systems. You see, what is the creator of light? The creator of light obviously would be intelligent infinity, or the one infinite creator, that issued forth the third principle, the principle of light, out of the interaction of free will and love, right? That's the theory. That's the cosmology. The planetary being, would it be considered disharmonious if it has, like Moldek and Mars, right? One has planetary destruction, the other one has atmospheric destruction. So it seems. Would those be considered disharmonious planets? Well, the population surely was disharmonious, but could you say that the planetary being itself is? I wouldn't say so. I would say that the Logos chose to allow such disharmonious souls to have a 3D cycle on those planets, and by allowance of free will, allowed those destructive outcomes. But that doesn't mean it's a disharmonious planet. It's a disharmonious group of souls in third density that were allowed a certain destructive outcome for their planet. But that doesn't mean it's a disharmonious planet. course, but consider the 60-30-10 metaphysics or cosmology from Ra, right? 60% of the 3D planets are harvest are positive harvest only, meaning nearly all the souls are living in love, more or less. In such a world, there wouldn't be war, there wouldn't be conflict, there wouldn't be all the disharmonies we find here. Yeah, that again ascribes power to negative entities' activity, I think excessively. The idea that there's an implant that prevents penetration of the human matrix or the cosmic matrix, meaning seeing reality, the power structure, let's say, or the negative, you know, the piercing the matrix of human evil, seeing into that, or seeing into multidimensionality. There's a difference, but of course Ra said that there was Orion genetic intervention around that time, 3500 BC, you know, before the present, 1500, and you could say certainly 1800 BC. That genetic manipulation did what? Well, it may well have established in human consciousness, it certainly established the notion of holy war, and so there's a conceptual seeding of certain concept like holy war that leads to negativity. There's perhaps a strengthening of materialism and overvaluation of material over the spiritual. There was perhaps some metaphysical work done to the planet or the astral plane. That doesn't stop realization, but it makes it harder. You can, you know, was Gautama fully enlightened? Was Yeshua really a wanderer who, or wanderer or not, but a being who achieved contact with intelligent infinity and was teaching relatively pure love, wisdom, the path back to the Logos? I think yes, indeed, they were what they claimed to be and were as awakened as we can consider them to be, Gautama being a little different than Yeshua, but both having contact with intelligent infinity, both having penetrated the human and the cosmic matrices, meaning having penetrated the veil. And so, surely, both were tempted, Gautama by Mara, Maya, and Yeshua by Satan, or the devil, or whatever. Both of them certainly had to contest with strong negative influence to achieve awakening, and after their awakening, so the histories go, and I think that's true, but that didn't stop them. It just made it harder. And so there's also, I think, a co-optation that some of the modern Gnostic researchers have made or done, co-opting the reality of the logoic veil in 3D mind, 3D physical mind, co-opting that and assuming that that's been achieved by Orion or the Archons or the Demiurge, or negative ET, reptilian, archonic, Orion, 4D negative, 5D negative, black magician, all of that, to ascribe to them what Ra and I would consider the veil in 3D human mind, or the veil in 3D space-time mind or consciousness. That's not made by the Archons, it's made by the Logos. It's part of the plan. That's why it's called the Law of Confusion. That confusion that issues from the veiling in 3D physical is part of divine plan. So the question is, who made that? Was it made by the Logos, or is it made by the Archons, Demiurge, Orion, negative ET? And I would say it was made by the Logos. Does it constitute an impenetrable barrier, or simply an obstruction that's difficult, that makes it harder to move to full awakening or activation of fourth, fifth, sixth chakra and coordination? I wouldn't say it's a hard, inviolable barrier. I would say that it makes it harder and is very much the result of humanity. humanity being of mixed orientation from the get-go 75,000 years ago with the Martian transfer. Meaning, humans were already leaning service to self, some people, and calling for the ways of service to self 75,000 years ago, all the way up to the time 1500, 1800 BC, when there was that further Orion genetic modification. But that's the result of humanity's choice to go without love, rejection of love. So I just see that the power of negativity in the octave is confined pretty much to third, fourth, and fifth density. And while their presence here is real and very influential, it isn't determinative or putting a hard, inviolable barrier to complete and perfect enlightenment, even at the human level. So there's a little nuance, I think, that needs to be considered there. Well, I think, yes, it's a mythology that I think has some metaphysical accuracy and can help us understand more. If we, you know, to the degree that we apply reason and intuition to understanding first what the mythology really is saying, because there are mythologies or there are modern teachers of Gnosticism that believe that the activity of negative entities, archons, demiurge, Orion, reptilians, 4D, 5D negative, all that, that their activity puts a hard limit and is an inviolable barrier to awakening or piercing the matrices. I don't think that's true. But some people believe that. And some people will say the mythology says that. And some mythologies perhaps probably do say that. And I think that's mistaken. So mythology is useful, but first we have to get clear what the mythology really is saying. And any translator or interpreter or teacher of Gnostic mythology is only as good first as their understanding of the mythology itself, and then in terms of their comprehension of the correspondence of that mythology to seven-dimensional metaphysics. So I just see a lot of people that have have a mistaken overemphasis of the power of negativity in cosmic plan by a mistaken generalization of conditions on planet Earth to conditions in the whole universe. Meanwhile, it seems to me, Ra's teaching of the categories of polarized consciousness in 3D groups and 3D planets in the galaxy, being 60-30-10, regarding to their harvest, positive mixed to negative, is very, very useful explaining what appears to be, what certainly can be called planetary disharmony, which is ultimately the result of the consciousness of the groups on the planet in 3D. So in fourth density also we have a different situation, even if the planet is hosting 4D negative life. The disharmony of the planetary sphere is different because it's higher dimensional. It's a different effect on the mineral and plant and animal, lower dimensional forms and energy fields than a 3D group that's negative or mixed. So I would just caution that there are a lot of people who don't realize the limits to negative power as well as they should, and in many ways are unwittingly doing the work of Orion by teaching mythologies or interpretations of mythologies that indicate a certain sovereignty, suzerainty, or great power ascribed to Orion or negative entities or Archon or Demiurge, which is not the case, but they surely would like you to think so. So I think we should be careful on that. And I appreciate our sharing or your questions and the dialogue. And I hope it's been useful for you all too. Take good care and good night.